Good morning, everybody. Welcome to take two of Horsemanship Remarks Show 165. I hope everybody comes back this morning. I was sideways and then Michael was sideways and we need to see all y'all this morning. And I don't want to be reading comments like all twisty. So come back so that we can chit chat about things. And like I said before, I have some photos to share with you guys this morning. It's been pretty exciting because I've been learning a lot. My little brain has been exploding. So that's really, really exciting. And I will cry if this does not work this morning. So let's see if Michael is back. Wendy, good morning. Julie, good morning. Jody, good morning. Congratulations, Julie, on Braylon's championship. She's an ice hockey player, college ice hockey player, super freaking star. I got to meet her when I was there, and I'm like looking up at this, you know, sort of ice princess. I'm like, whoa, you are so cool. Oh, here we go. Here's Michael. Val, good morning. Let's see. We'll find out what's on Michael's mind, and then you guys shout out. Yes,
we got it.
Yeah, shout out what's on your mind this morning as well. How are you, Michael Sparling?
I'm fantastic, and you?
I'm fantastic too.
I'm fantastic.
That's right.
Great day. So I was talking to Kim about that yesterday. Excuse me. And you know, I mentioned a while ago that like Sadie requires like a bit of focus to like, she thrives when you're like giving her lots of attention and positive attention. And it's like a lot going on right now. And I mean, just see Sadie load up because there's a lot of people coming and she was going to be barking at everybody. So I'm like, go load up in your spot. But I have to like go get her and be all enthusiastic and pet her and then take her over there. And we're about halfway there. She runs and gets on it. I can't just from 30 feet away say, go load up. So I have a visitor. I knew I would have visitors because it's spring break. I gotta say hi though.
Hi. Good morning, Lydia. So, you know, I have your sticker on my water bottle. Mm-hmm. So I think about you every day. And I am just having to wait a little bit to edit our travel vlog. I have so much editing coming up. I was having filmmaker dreams last night, Michael. Like I had this shot and nobody was mic'd up and it was like six people and I was all stressed out. So anyway, I will be working on it. Are you doing good, Lydia?
Yeah.
Tell her about what you've been doing with Chief and how you've been recording it.
I don't know how.
Well, tell her you've been using her.
What?
Her thing.
I don't know a thing.
Yeah, well, you think about it and come back when you figure it out. Joanne says now she's getting audio. So does that mean it wasn't working before, you guys? I'm seeing your comments.
Anyway, Lydia's using your horsemanship log that you brought to the clinic and enjoying it. It's been very motivating.
Using it.
She likes the pictures and the...
Of course she does. She and I are like this.
She likes the she wanted to know where are the stars. There's not a sheet for the stars. So what are the stars at the bottom of the thing mean? Do you remember?
Yeah, are you still every using time them? You sit on your horse, you get a gold star.
Oh. So you get gold stars every time.
So you can mark it off.
Oh, so I had it once.
Yeah, well, not more. You've been riding more than once. All right, we'll see you later.
So Sadie ran.
No, we'll see you later. No. Aww. We don't need to know. Okay. All right, we can edit that section out if we need to.
I'm not editing anything right now. You guys are gonna just have to deal with it. Skip through.
Okay. So I was talking to Kim. You gotta be so enthusiastic about Sadie. I'm just like, oh, this is so exhausting. Everyone needs energy. I was like,
tell me about it.
amount of energy it takes to manage children and be on their level and, you know, skirting around to avoid conflict or whatever, just to keep them moving in the right direction without just being like barking at them all the time. It takes like strategizing in your brain and like thinking, how do I keep the ball rolling without just being a dictator and getting them involved and all that. So it takes a lot of energy. And then I get the dog, and the dog needs me to be like, oh, do, do. I'm like, I don't have this kind of energy. I'm not going to get on Facebook Live and be like, hey, good morning. I'm going to be like, all right, yep, doing good. That's all the energy I've got left. You guys are getting the scraps.
That's good enough. Good enough, right?
Well, yes. and then Kim's like, oh, but you know, just be yourself, which is great. I can be myself here and don't have to be all crazy enthusiastic. But I'm like, well, you have to shape yourself to the dog. Like, you have to match their personality. And if they need more from you, I guess you got to do more. There's no getting around it. And then, you know, if every kid just was self-motivated and basically acted like an adult, they did everything they needed to do, well, then that's fine. You don't need to use any mental energy to do it. But, you know, that's not reality. They're kids and they need to learn to do that. And here's another one off on spring break.
Hi.
Good morning, Levi.
Good morning, Emma.
How are you this morning?
Good. And sick.
Oh, dang. Well, drink lots of water. Take your vitamin D.
And excited for Great Wolf Lodge.
Ooh, that's pretty cool.
We're going swimming today.
So. Yep. Sounds right. Fun.
Go
enjoy.
Drink water. Take your vitamin D. Love you. All right. I knew we'd have an appearance from both of them. They were both excited.
I forgot it was
for
break. Yeah.
They're both excited to say hi.
Yeah. Good.
All right.
What's on your mind horsemanship wise this morning? And you guys too.
I don't know. Let me think for a second. Didn't you just say you had a list?
Mm-hmm.
Oh gosh. I definitely don't have a list.
I'm being polite and asking you first.
Well, why don't we just go with what you got, and then whatever is going on in my head will formulate into thoughts, and I'll interject.
Okay. Let's see. So I have a few things on my mind. I have the idea of doing chores, just doing your chores, doing mercenary work, doing KP duty. I kind of want to talk about that because I've definitely been thinking about it lately with my new project, which we are past the point of no return, you guys. We are definitely past the point of no return. So,
in which aspect the project is a go or the cat is out of the
bag? Yeah, we are committed now. So I still have to pull it off, but yeah, we're kind of in deep four horses now. One more getting delivered today.
Not the third one.
No. Oh. It's the little den. Actually,
that's
I don't think she's
four. Done, I thought that was three.
No, that's four.
I'm missing.
Okay, but all right. So, in regards to getting in with meaning, like taking on riding some new horses that I don't know, but more than just like helping a horse for 3 days. Or help a person and a horse for 3 days, 3-4 days, but not super long. And finding the holes, he's laughing because what I will tell you guys, this is coming either next week, I'll tell you, or the week, probably next week, honestly, if I make it through the show today without telling you. So, but you don't have to know to understand this. The reality is you find the holes in the horse, right? Like, which are inevitably going to be there when one way or the other, either they just haven't been filled in yet for whatever reason, or they really did get missed for whatever reason. Okay. So you lay out your work by assessing the horse and knowing the order. And figuring out how it's going to lay onto what the horse already knows, because it's not a clean horse. But then there comes a point when you just got to do your chores. And I looked up the definition of chores today, and sometimes it has a negative connotation and sometimes it doesn't. I was also thinking of it in terms of doing work. And the reason chores keeps coming to mind, I wanted to ask you if this resonates with you and you guys too, is, for instance, if the horse has no idea about a one rein stop, or for instance, I'm going to share a few photos with you guys with this little Morgan that I'm riding, and he just does not know how to package himself front to back in relationship to the reins. He's going to be fun because he's obviously super handy, built to be compact, but he has, you know, learned to be heavy. And so it's like, you don't have to make that happen in one day. And we know all the pieces that add up to a horse being able to put a bend in the hocks. That was funny. Yeah, my comment did not come off back to you in regards to that. But she was just holding it up. I'm like, oh, that's quite the bend.
Yeah.
And not because she was super afraid or whatever. My horse, Prim, was holding her leg up when I was spraying her off, and the compression in her hind leg, you know, her hip to stifle, to hawk, to, it was like squash down. Anyway, so this little horse, his name is Mowgli, and he will, it's not hard for him, but I also can't cram it down his throat, which means I have to just do enough repeats so that he gets handy at it, right? Or there's some other things, you know, he's not really used to having ropes around his legs. It's like, but he's not, you know, he's not going to have a big trauma with it. He's not like been traumatized by ropes or anything like that. It's just, it hasn't been done. So you just got to do your chores. You know, put in the repeats, put in the days, let the days add up. And so it's not, I guess, the reason I'm thinking about the word chore is because I don't have emotional things that I need to adjust in my head regarding to it. I'm pretty like clear on what needs to be done. I generally know how to do it well enough to improve the horse or to help the horse understand and give them enough time to get good at it physically. So it's not a self-development thing exactly in the same way that the overall picture of growing in horsemanship, like, so I'm filming for you guys for Horsemanship Insider, and Debbie will come over, and for the other project, but you know, Debbie will come over, we'll do the filming, but now there's a place where it's like, okay, now we just got to do our chores, and then we'll do an update. Does that sound right, you guys? It's not a negative thing. It's just like, if you're going to make pasta or make a salad, let's say, you know, the creative process is like, oh, what am I going to put in the salad? But then at a certain point, you have to sit there and chop. You're like, all right, here we go. We're going to peel the onions or peel the potatoes and chop the onions and do the things. Which is fun too, because then the process can flow over you. But the reality is, there is a point when a horse has holes, from my perspective, that you just got to do your chores to fill them in. What do you think about that?
Gonna have a negative connotation or a positive connotation. Depends on how you feel about chores or what you're thinking of as chores.
Yeah.
Most kids think of chores as a negative thing. unless there is just a matter of fact thing and
that, you know, chores. That is what I'm driving at.
I get how it can be a, like, it's just the stuff you do on a day to day basis that you, it becomes a rhythm and whatever, but
you know,
to me, chores always has a, I have to do the chores.
Yeah.
At least that's how I felt as a kid, and I know that's how my kids feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Lisa is saying, I agree with Michael, for some, chores is negative. Yeah, even if you look it up, there is, like...
Well, especially, there are... like, oh, that's such a chore.
Yeah, I know. I guess one of the definitions I saw was routine. And that is more like that. You got to, even if you know what your plan is at the gym, you still have to just do the reps with quality. With quality. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to talk about it. All right, that's fine. Next.
Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. So this is the other. Well, this kind of relates in the sense that I was thinking, if you continually do things that do not suit the horse, eventually it will not work out. Then the other thing I was thinking is, it's pretty amazing when a horse is presented with something that suits them. Oh man, so long as they understand it, they just melt right into it.
No.
And then you're like, well, I didn't really do anything. I was thinking that with Frosty, the Cremello, because, and you guys will see it, but like the Candid that is here on the Northwood Farms page is at the very end of my very first groundwork session, but I was strong with that horse in moments, like, pretty sure. For instance, my shoulder is still sore. He's 1,000 pounds. But oh man, after that, poof.
Is it just cornering him, or what do you mean?
No, it's not just cornering him, right? I was thinking about you the whole time because he would, you know, once you corner him, then he needs to go forward and around. You know, and then once you're like, hey, get out and around, then he needs to not go too far out. So there was a lot of ping-ponging the horse in the beginning, the first few minutes, where it was interesting, because you think, okay, well, if I present this slowly and methodically, you know, then it will be easier for the horse to figure out. But also, there's a way to sometimes just get it rolling, and you can present a bunch of different things at one time. If it adds up to something that suits the horse, it is incredible how many data points they can collect and come up with an answer, even though an answer is not really the thing.
Yeah, that should be one to find a way of saying that's better than an answer, because I know exactly what you're driving at, and I also can feel the answer is not quite it component.
Because that makes it sound like we're making something up. And the more, like, this round of horses, really like interesting.
Test.
Yeah, or like, you know, they're supposed to figure out something that's not intuitive to them. But to me, this is the magic of the curriculum that we know. I asked Buck for a better word the other day, and he was like, meh. Because, I mean, it kind of is still slotting, not a set, huh?
Slotting in.
Yeah. he does not like that
one. Really?
Even though that's exactly what it is, because if it suits the horse, then it's really just, it's not really an answer. It's just the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, you guys, don't be texting me right now because it's popping up the top. I don't know if I can set it on. I should have set it on do not disturb. I don't know, Michael, if it's because these are not clean horses, but they're super get along horses, that it's a neat data set, because even though they're not clean, they're super apt to follow and pick up whatever is valuable. Like, for instance, that Cremello is super bad to bridle. Woo! It could be worse. He could be pawing me on the top of the head, or instead of slinging his head away from me, he could sling it towards me. Instead of kind of going backwards, not even super far backwards, he could be, you know, coming over, like, he could be using his 1,000 pounds, you know, to really go. So that's another interesting thing, is he does not want to be bridled. It's not just like I'm kind of bad to bridle, like I'm not good, but he's like, no. But even amongst all of those braces, you can feel him searching for the softness. Like I just feel him feeling it. So it's like a river or a creek, let's call it a creek, I suppose, that has rocks in it. Well, yes, the rocks are there, but the stream is going around it. And you can feel him just naturally flowing towards that softness, which to me implies that harmony is natural or is innate, is maybe a better way to say it. Like, that's just how the universe works.
They're just looking for it.
Yeah. And of course the horses, my impression is that they are not intellectually looking for it in that moment, like this one, but innately he's just feeling around for it. This one is so interesting. Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason I say looking for it, even if it's not intellectual in that moment, it's like that's what they're craving. That's what.
Yes.
Like, so basically, if you set it up that there's an opportunity for that, whether Buck likes the term or not, then they're just going to slot in and find. They're going to meet you there. Now, there's situations where it might take a bit more to interrupt a negative pattern that has worked for them in the past. But like you said, if you can kind of shut that door maybe, or interrupt that thought, interrupt that pattern, and then just go, well, okay, what else could you do? They're going to start going, okay, this is different. That pattern didn't work. That maybe there is something else. There might be some intellectual component of thinking, well, what can or should I do? And now I'm thinking about you rather than just tuning you out because you were like everybody else in my mind. Now I'm going to slide into at least thinking about you. But I think as soon as they do that, like you said, if you offer it to them, why wouldn't they? Like, they're going to be eating it up, basically.
I guess all of what you said, of course, yes. Additionally, what occurs to me is it's inevitable because that's how the universe works. Which, again, implies that if it's not working, it's on us. Duh. But it's just kind of cool when just doing the things we do allows the horse to flow. Whatever. I don't know. None of these are good.
We should just
they're so dissatisfying to me to explain it.
Show's over, guys. We got nothing else to say.
Yeah, exactly. So Marcy says, I would think they would keep seeking peace like the rest of us, for sure. Marcy. Okay. Here's what I'm trying to put my finger on. The seeking seems like effortful, and there is certainly times, there are certainly times when it does require them figuring out a puzzle, especially when we're putting more complex things together. Oh, Michael, I'm thinking about the flying changes because thinking about a horse finding canter parts on a short line. We could go back to that later, but it seems effortless. Perhaps that's what I'm trying to put my finger on. And it's really interesting because the three horses that I have right now are all sort of different, but they're all sort of the same in the sense that I've picked a certain background and a certain personality type. In other words, I get along kind of a horse, but they all kind of have some sort of different education level. But I guess that is the word I'm hunting for, is it's effort, like it's inevitable and effortless for them to find that softness if it's there anywhere. So bridling that horse made me just think, like I could feel him going from one brace to the next and yet noticing the softness, which was all happening pretty fast, you know. And side note, is anyone short like me? Because, so I'm 5'2", barely, right? And when I have my hand on my horse's nose like this, my motherfucking thumb does not reach the corner of their mouth. So you see all these perfect bridlings from all these dudes that are like 6'2" or whatever, 6 feet, or, you know, they're like, all you do is you run your hand over their nose and then you stick your thumb in the corner of their mouth. It's like, how about I chop off half your thumb and see how you do it? It sucks because it's like, oh, you're so close. And yet you really just need another 3/4 of an inch and it would work. Yeah, Joanne. And says she's 4'10", so she gets it, right? Well, that's why we need littler horses. But even on a little horse, their nose to the corner of their mouth, where you could say, hey, why don't you open your mouth? It just doesn't reach. That sucks. Brenda Lee says, what do you mean by clean? And what we mean by clean is just a horse that hasn't had any development at all. So if you run a horse off the range, whether it be a big ranch or BLM land, something like that, run them into a horse trailer, drop them off in a round pen, they're clean. And then there's degrees of clean, right? So a horse that's kind of halter broke, but really hasn't had any education, like we still consider that kind of a clean horse. And in fact,
depending on what we're calling halter broke.
Yeah, like on a halter.
But that's, I mean, it can be very not clean having just been halter broke if the halter breaking was pretty poorly done.
True. And then you'll have horses that are clean in some areas, and then meaning they have open water in some areas, and then other areas they've been definitely, there's stuff to clean up, so to speak. That makes sense. The less education they have, the less handling they have, the more clean they are. Would you agree with that, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you have a bridal horse that has been developed perfectly, that's not a clean horse. Because it knows a lot of things. That's my interpretation of it anyway. Joanne says, I can relate to what you're saying in regard to the horse searching for softness. Currently working with my new Welsh pony, Cricket. Oh my Lord, this is the cutest name. When I first got him, he was reluctant to lead as he, in my opinion, was pulled or drug along. When presented it with little pressure, he led and understood following the feel. He now leads effortlessly. That's pretty awesome. Katie, Morgan can relate to the short height and thumb as she and she has the tallest horse we have. It's all right. We just figure out a different way. The most important thing is that we don't look at a tall person and be like, we have to do it just like them, when physically we cannot do the same thing exactly. So we just modify a little bit with the same principles in mind. Brenda says, finding a way to do the work and make it fun. Well, sure. Yeah. Faith, good morning. I just want to make sure that, Marcy, if you're still here, I really would like to hear what you think about the seeking versus the effortless part. Because there are times when we need a horse to put in a lot of effort, either mentally in particular, right? And that is what is sticking with me, especially on this Frosty horse, is it's bizarrely effortless for him. Quite is bizarrely effortless for him.
Well, yeah, I think there's probably even a continuum in terms of seeking being a kind of overwhelmed by the prospect of there being something else, because, pulling on the rope is not working, or throwing my head up is not getting you to go away, whatever, where it's like, I'm seeking in the wrong direction, or I have been and not even thinking about it, and now suddenly, I'm going, whoa, that didn't work, or this isn't working, and the brain starts rolling. They are starting to seek, but pretty soon when they find that softness, then the seeking becomes, like you say, inevitable. They're just like, is what they've been looking for all along is some way for it to not feel miserable, which is why they're maybe pulling on the rope, which is why their head is up while you're bridling. Is it going, this has not been a pleasant experience up until now, but as soon as there's opportunities where it feels soft, then it becomes, it shifts from a thinking or a like, whoa, this is different, to this is great. And then that's where the slotting in comes, where they're taking it all in as if this is how it should have been all along, because that's how it could have been all along. And it seems like it's almost like they realize that, or that's what they've been waiting on.
Well, there's no question about that. I would 100% agree.
But I mean, wouldn't you say that, I mean, there's a continuum, I guess, if we use the word seeking, to where seeking eventually shifts to an effortless.
Yeah, perhaps what I'm trying to put my finger on is that it seemed like we didn't have any seeking. He was just noticing. So we're not at the place where he's seeking, especially when it comes to bridling. And it's been pretty mess, ends up great. So it'll be very interesting when he's like, click, So, I mean, it's not violent or anything like that, but there's just not enough parsed out to be like, okay, go from here to here. It's just, in between everything, he's soft and I'm noticing the softness, and so then he's noticing the softness, and it's just there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, even I wasn't, I mean, I guess I was looking for it. I'm not intellectually. I mean, I don't know. It just seemed, like.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say this. It seemed like the softness was there. And because it is natural for us both to magnetize towards that, it just automatically drew us without us going there. That is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. And that is more of an allowing versus a seeking. And I don't want to miss your thought, but remind me to go back to Mowgli and the clicker training.
So perhaps it's the degree, I don't know if I want to say, but the degree of pressure or how much they're coming up against the parameters that shifts us from seeking to, I don't know, it's just like the other stuff is shedding away when it's a
yeah.
Like you're describing them finding it, and where you're not even, I don't know, like you said, allowing, you're just waiting on them, you're not applying any pressure, you're just going, why are you doing that, that's not necessary. And then they're not really looking for, because they're coming up against all this pressure, looking for a different answer. They're just going, why am I doing this? And then just melting into meeting you somewhere softer, because there's nothing to brace against. You're giving them no cause to.
Yeah, except for I had to jerk on that horse a couple times. I did.
That's a good question then. So out of that, was there, at that moment, there was probably a more active seeking, taking it in, going, whoa, recalibrate. But then it shifted once that boundary was set. The boundary was unquestioned. To a degree,
this goes back to what you were saying.
Settle in.
Yeah, this goes back to what you were saying in terms of putting up a wall, and then the wall isn't there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say that again? Because that's
the wall's not. Well, in that case, I was talking about a horse that was kind of surging. Word, I haven't surgery, I don't remember specifically, but just kind of bumping on the rope when they're hurrying forward, but then not bumping until they're already, you know, they're all the way backing up, and it's just this big, like, you come off the rope. It was just like, interrupt that thought, and then what are you going to do with it, right? The wall might show up again if you continue to surge forward, but the wall is not going to stay there or keep coming at you. The wall is not going to push you back. So once the wall is there, you've met the wall, and now what are you going to do with it? So, I mean, I guess that would be the goal with any spot in the rectangle. And that's why it's almost like the rectangle flexes around the horse. That it opens, at least this is how my brain thinks of it a bit. It opens, so there's almost more space within it until they start to leave the center of that space. Then the sides might come in and say, oh, there is a boundary. Stay in the center of this space. Don't push out and push on the sides of the rectangle. So it's like putting a float in, right? I'm not going to hold you between my legs. I'm not going to hold you with my reins. I'm not going to push you forward constantly with my legs. There's space in there for you to operate straight, united, soft, all of that. But if you kind of get lost somewhere and are about to come up against the sides of the rectangle is going to come in and support you back to that center and then give you the space to be there again. It's like the supporting the dancer analogy you used the other day. Like, here you have space to do it, but oh, I'm going to catch you because you're about to fall and find your balance again, get you a range so that you can hold that position as you move rather than, and then as soon as you find it, I'm going to kind of take my hands away and let you kind of feel around for trying to maintain that on your own. So whether it be kind of a boom, the wall is there, and now what are you going to do with it?
Did I talk about
kind of saying like the bridling thing or whatever you did to firm up it, whatever the scenario was there? You know, that might be a little bit more kind of where I was talking about the wall when I first mentioned it, a little bit more shocking to where it's like, whoa, I just came up against something. But once that boundary is set and there's not such a just almost kind of like a blind, you know, of course I can just walk forward right here, like no thought that there could be a boundary on that part of their body.
Yeah.
Once that boundary is set, now they're less likely to come up into that boundary. And so that boundary doesn't need to be in close or hold you. It certainly doesn't need to be. Basically, we don't want to hold them into anything. Like, you set your boundaries, but then let them find center. And that's what I think about a lot. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what your bridling's looking like with Frosty. But that's what I think about a lot when I'm bridling, is just like, well, I don't know. It's a little bit like backing up and how it can, like, it's one of the places I feel like people can get addicted, because it's just like, whoa, I'm not doing anything and the horse is just backing up, which going forward, you know, not doing anything and the horse is walking forward. Well, that's not very magical. You know, you feel that all the time, right? Someone gets on the horse and they're just walk off. But to just kind of be there and your intention is about all that's going on for this horse to just flow and float on back. You're not pulling, you're not working, whatever. It has that same feeling in my body when I'm waiting on a horse, maybe like Frosty, that has a real resistance to be like, why are you up there? Like, there's another spot for you to be. And just kind of hanging with them until they just float on back, or in this case, soften into a spot that's less guarded and defensive. There's nothing I'm doing necessarily once we've maybe shut some doors. Like, I'm going to just push forward through you. It's like,
exactly. And
interrupted probably a few times. I'm going to back up and then roll the hindquarters and say, well, that's not quite going to work for you either. Or, you know, blocking if they really throw their head into you or whatever. There's all kinds of walls that you might have to define, boundaries. But then from there, once those major escape doors that they've shoved themselves through in the past are shut, they can almost be left open then, because you're not holding.
Which is kind of valuable, just because that way the horse doesn't feel like you're making it happen. They mm-hmm. don't feel like they're blocked in any way. It's just being magnetized towards the middle, because that's where center earth is.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's because, yeah, center Earth. Okay.
Whatever.
That's,
I mean,
that's where they live, right? That's where, I mean, that's where they want to live, right?
Well, that's
what's interesting is
we're all polarized to that, I guess, is a little bit what I'm saying, right? And then that is the cool part about being around horses for more than 3 or 4 days that I don't know, because they're highlighting things, they're showing me things that are difficult for me to see with my horses, just in that they are my friends. I know, we know each other. So I have all this latitude because we're good friends, and, like, you know, things are just different when you're friends with a horse and they're your family and all of that. So these strangers coming in are showing me things that I, that are real with all the horses, but I don't connect it all the time. And since I get to do it my way, anyway, center Earth, polarized, they want to be there. And then the only thing I would add to your statement is, and we want to be there too. Everything wants to be there.
Yeah.
My theory.
It's interesting to think about horses and their different personalities being more comfortable or less comfortable with certain standing or position within the herd, and then when the herd does not kind of allow for that, they can be kind of unsettled or just not feel completely comfortable and at peace. So, for example, because you're looking at me like,
say more words.
Exactly. What are you referring to? So Michelle's horse, Boxer, he is way more settled when he has a leader who, I don't know if he needs him to tell him where to be, but he doesn't feel any need to be in charge if someone else is in charge. But you can just tell, like, it was just he and Rooster together, and Rooster used to kind of just annoy the crap out of him and, you know, try to play, and he'd kind of play along, but then be like, oh, you're stupid and overwhelming. But now, in some turn of events, he kind of pushes Rooster around. Rooster's not as obnoxious with him. Rooster's kind of settled in a little bit more. Boxer probably just wasn't making it any fun to try to play, so he's, you know, kind of given up on the I'm gonna play. He's not quite the obnoxious baby that would just be persistent. Anyway, Boxer now is pushing him around, but Boxer, you can tell, is not as comfortable being in that role as he is if there is a lead horse and he can just kind of,
of course,
take a breath. So
that's interesting, how I feel.
The different personalities slotting into the magnetic center or wanting to be in that harmony, that different horses are going to, at least amongst themselves, like that center or be most comfortable with a certain role, as this is what feels right as center. I don't know. That's what it made me think of.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's very, very cool highlight. It makes me feel, the whole experience makes me feel secure in that you will find it. And I keep coming back to, you guys heard me say this when I was there in Wisconsin. I didn't do anything. All of it was there already. Do you want to explain did I tell you guys about the ballerina thing? I might have just said that at Horsemanship Insider.
No.
Did we say that on the show?
Yeah. Well,
we did.
I don't know. I think you did mention it on the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me just.
Yeah, and I just referred to it.
Okay, so imagine a person. You can see this on Instagram on any many reels of a little ballerina learning to turn, do a pirouette on her point toe, on one toe, and the helper is there, standing there, helping her stay upright as she's kind of feeling around for the center of balance and the inertia and all of the things that you have to do to be able to do a pirouette on your toes, on one foot. So the guide is there to help at first, and you'll see them, like they'll turn them. They will help make the movement happen the first time. And then pretty soon they'll send the momentum and make sure that as the ballerina is gonna fall, they either let them fall and then put them back up again, or pretty soon when it's gonna be close, they might just make a tiny adjustment. But the whole point about that is the guide is helping. In fact, in some cases, the guide might be manufacturing the movement, but then they have to let the ballerina do it on their own. A little bit different than what I'm talking about today, just because there's no manufacturing the softness. You don't have to manufacture the softness. It's there. It is fucking there. That's the thing. You don't have to make it up. You might have to uncover it, sweep things away, but it's there. So let's read some comments. The horse's hierarchy of needs begins with safety, which equate to peace. It's biology more than intellectual. I don't know, Marcy. I don't know. Sounds kind of dumb to say. She's so experienced.
What's the last thing she said?
She said the horse's hierarchy of needs begins with safety, which I equate to peace. And then she says it's biology more than intellectual.
That's biology.
No. That's interesting. That's interesting. And of course, if you were to type it into Google, that is certainly. I think that peace is so much more than safety. But, I mean, a horse does want safety. But there is a peace, a connection, a spiritual thread that is just there. And it's more than just safety. And if we imagine that every living thing comes from harmony, is naturally drawn back to harmony, then it's more than just feeling like you're not going to be killed, which is what a horse, we can see on the surface, like a horse is worried about being killed. I don't know. It's interesting. It's very interesting. Thank you so much for replying.
Well, and that's a bit, I mean, on the biology side of things, or the kind of innate tendency of a horse's personality in terms of where being comfortable in the herd fits. I think that is kind of a blending of the biology of this is where I do feel safe and comfortable, yep, and more peaceful. Yeah, that's what's crazy, because I mean, you definitely can tap a spot in the horse where they're more at peace, basically, and that's where it's almost just kind of silly for the response to be relief, right? So here's pressure. And,
don't get me started because I'm thinking a lot about like the answer. Day.
What we offer our horses relief is like, well, I'm relieved. Like, I'm relieved that didn't go south, right? But instead, having a spot where the horse is basically more peaceful with you, like truly just there. And it is not easy, but that is something more than just I'm comfortable in the herd standing around. It's kind of all encompassing. It's the spiritual connection. It's like you have helped me find, you have helped me to find a kind of sacred spot.
Or you've finally gotten your shit together and come with me. That's from the horse's perspective. Like, oh, good. Let's go where we should have gone all along. Some horses know more about that than others, it seems like.
So how was that? I mean, I can see then where Marcy would say, well, that's just biology if it's that's, if that's
in a way, our spirituality is tied to our biology. Obviously, we're whole. Somewhere. Mm-hmm. Cannot divorce your biology from your spirituality. I don't think.
I mean, so that's where I think the biology component is there. The safe versus peace is, I think there's a little bit more than just safety, like you're saying, involved in being peaceful.
Right. And so you're probably not going to feel peaceful if you're afraid for your safety. Yeah. That's why it's
And that's why I brought up boxers. Like, he's not really peaceful. He's not necessarily worried for his safety, but he doesn't feel comfortable being the one in charge. He doesn't like that role. So,
same. Same.
So he would rather be slotting in and feel more peace if there's someone else. And that's all horses, can find that position, even if they're a pretty dominant horse, to just go, well, you got it all taken care of. Right? We're together.
All of what you guys are saying is right. I there's something additional.
You're in the weeds.
I am so in the weeds. I'm so sorry. Okay, let's get to some of these guys. So Julie says, as an also short person, I don't even think about not being able to do the things that tall people do. Horses just adapt to what we shorties say and do the same way they adapt to tall people's communication. True. Of course, you're right. 100%. It's just sometimes we have to adjust the technique for ourselves so that, you know, a person might go, I bridle a horse this way. And if it's like your thumb is too short to do it that way, you're going to have to come up with a different technique. And on some horses, you don't notice it. On this particular horse, I really needed to control his nose, which I was definitely able to do. But then when I needed to just open his mouth, which would have been so simple, I only had one hand to do that, right? So if I could have controlled his nose and run my thumb just at the corner of his mouth, it would have been over, but I could not do it like that. But you're right. It doesn't matter. You still just figure it out. Val. Yes, Val always comes through with this. She's right. The component that remains unspoken is the caliber of skill of the handler. And I would just add to that, there's a caliber of skill. Yes. And there's also a level of awareness, I think, of what's possible. So I don't know what Joanne said here. I might not be getting that comment. Um, let's see. Corey says, waiting on the horse to find it versus pressuring them to hurry up and do it. This has been an important mind shift for me to learn. It's more a shift in my mind rather than a big shift in what I'm doing. Oh, yeah, yeah. Physically. And the change that is allowing my horse to make it so amazing. It's just so cool how much the horse senses your state of mind. Mm-hmm. And so challenging for me to keep my mind right. Absolutely. Julia says, I feel like I've been creating a space. Vinny has a bit of a lost feeling and is easily distracted. It's been interesting to play with. Joanne says, her dynamics are so fun to watch. Carrie, good morning. Yeah, this all true. It's like you can know the technique, but you still have to have an awareness and the listening thing. I was thinking about that. But you guys will see. When I post the Frosty videos, which will be probably pretty soon, because I'm just going to be drowning in media, so you guys are probably just going to get a lot coming at you. I was going to wait to release these horses when the project is rolling, but it's too much. I'm just going to start heading it over your way. So anyone who's a member of Horsemanship Insider, set aside some time to be watching videos. I was very, very strong with him, Corey. Like, really, it felt my, like I said, my shoulder is sore. So if I had just set it up and just been wandering around in there, I don't know if it would have been a service to him. So that's the part I always come back to. It's like, you can't make the horse find it, but you can prevent them from falling off a cliff. I don't know. This is so pointless, I guess, to continue to talk about that. I want to talk about the clicker training thing, but he's thinking. What else, you guys? I want you guys to keep making comments, even if I'm not thinking about it the same way as you are. I love that. I love that.
Thinking of what Corey was mentioning there, of kind of your mental, being right mentally and your intention and all that, and your response of, you know, yes, and just kind of set it up and let them find it, just inviting rather than thinking of getting them to do it, and whether or not it's a service in certain situations to kind of just set the parameters pretty wide and let them find it. And we've talked before about how narrow might your parameters be in any given situation to move things forward efficiently, to help the horse find it, to whatever. So, and just thinking in terms of the round corral, you know, you can't make anything happen. The horse is loose, right? You can't. Okay, but I mean, you don't have a rope to interrupt things, right? You can't corner them, right? But it doesn't really do much to just stand there and watch the horse go around without any intention, whatever, and they're just like scraping their nose around the top of the round, or their heads up around the top of the round corral. If there's not some sort of interaction there, that's maybe not cornering them with a lead rope or drawing with a lead rope, but it's also not just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for it to come through without any sort of back and forth feeling going on. I don't know.
Yeah. And what occurred to me right as you were talking in the beginning is a lot of that is dependent on how suitable what our goal is with the horse, like what we are aiming at. Once again, it's not an answer that we are making up. It's something that suits the horse, suits the universe, suits us. It just, so then my point is then it's a matter of, it's easier to just block or help the horse from falling off a cliff because the pathway is inevitably going to draw them forward, and you don't have to do that. You guys, that's what I'm coming around to. That's what I'm coming around to. Corey, thank you for saying that, because that's... And so, Michael, this is the thing. If your curriculum does not suit the horse, what, whatever, however you want to evaluate that, but the statement, I think, still rings true, no matter what your curriculum is. If it does not suit the horse, you will end up having to make things happen or draw your parameters down tighter and tighter and tighter so they figure out what your plan is. And inevitably, at some point, if it doesn't suit the horse, things are going to go wrong. But a horse can get along in spite of a lot of things. Okay. But if it suits the horse, you're helping and setting things up. That's really just a function of how off track they've gotten because of us. Otherwise, they'd be marching along this path anyway, because that is the way of the universe. So if they're falling off a cliff here or there, it's because they're not understanding how to relate to you, to me. I mean, it's better to say. Paula, oh good. This is the cheerleader pony, you know? Do you see, you follow me, Michael? Because if the horse wasn't going to do it anyway, then you have to draw your parameters down and set everything up such that they're really dialed into you, which is fine, of course. Then they can figure it out, versus if it's going to happen anyway, you don't have to do that much. Mm-hmm. Brings us back to the clean comment. But think about the story that the lore, this is horsemanship lore, of Tom Dorrance wanting to be a part of this branding and him going out into the field of two-year-olds or whatever, and half an hour later he's riding this horse and branding. Well, hypothetically, if that were true, how is he doing that? He doesn't have time to make all these parameters and, you know, set up the horse as a new way of relating to them and explain safety and this and that. No, all he's doing is allowing the horse to do what it naturally does. If he was asking it to do bizarre things that didn't suit it, he's not agreeing with me, so.
Well, I mean, from a horse's perspective, as we've said numerous times, throwing a saddle on him, throwing a rope, dragging a calf around isn't exactly natural to the horse. I mean,
depends on how you look at it, though. It depends on how you look at it, just because, yeah, okay, the external, like, we are dragging a cow around, yes. But the baseline for that, or the curriculum for that, such that the horse is already doing those movements and already using its body in a way that allows all of that to happen, and already has not been blocked from finding peace, then we're missing the point just a tiny bit in terms of, like, oh, the horse is jumping a big course, or oh, the horse is dragging a cow. Dragging sounds bad, but dragging a cow. Or the horse is, whatever the horse is doing, it's like, yeah, that's not what I'm talking about when I'm talking about the curriculum. That's just what you do with the curriculum. It's different.
Yeah.
Faith, what do you mean? Do you think the time off can do that as well? What do you mean by that? You're talking about clean? Is that what you're saying? Okay. So this brings me to Mowgli and the clicker training thing.
Okay.
Did I mention this before?
No.
Okay. So I was riding him. Yeah, it wouldn't have been because I've only had two rides on. And I was riding him thinking, because you use your legs to say go forward and he goes slower, which is not natural. Or at least I don't think so. Anyway, he is super small and cute. He is like absolutely the kind of horse that you know you could have him doing circus tricks, anything you wanted, in 20 minutes if you were using a clicker and treats. He'd be all about it, and his kind of blah expression would completely change. He'd be on all this dopamine, and he'd be like, you know, you'd have a walk, trot, canter. You probably even, I mean, it would happen so fast if you had a clicker and treats. So it's interesting, someone who's done clicker training, to be so convicted that sitting up there, that's not what I want him. It's not about just doing the thing. That's not it. I don't want him to just do the thing super fastly. Super fastly. Right away.
Do it fastly and nicely.
Yeah. Right? That was so interesting. Because I was thinking it would skew my opportunity. Probably completely remove it, honestly. My opportunity to flow into that spiritual harmony that comes through the process. It would bypass that. And yes, we'd be doing the things. And yes, he'd be wound up about it.
He'd be enthusiastic.
He would. I wish I could clone him, kind of, or be able to unwind, like with the little flashy lights from Men in Black or something, because it would be fascinating to see the difference. I have done it. And there's a pretty amazing, like, it will show you what a horse can figure out when they are motivated, when you are clear. Like, it's incredible. 20 minutes, I'll bet you this horse would have been doing all sorts of amazing things. It would be an exercise in how fast I can think up things. So I've done it. It's not the same. There's a depth to the process of coming together where your whole body has to be a part of it, your whole spirit, my whole body, my whole spirit, my intuition, not just my consciousness, my intuition, which you do use in clear training because you're good at it. The whole thing has to come to bear, and then the horse has to start to hook on to that. But what I'm referring to at the top of the show and talking about Frosty is I was thinking that I had to be this, which I do. I have to be in a certain state, and then I'm drawing the horse to my state, right? And then we're going to do stuff together. But this is what I think now. I'm in a certain state and being drawn to something that is center earth or whatever. And the horse is also being drawn to that. And then we go together. Because we inevitably are going there. Gonna have to hack our way out of the weeds this morning. Okay, so I'll give you guys some practical things. Oh, Marcy says, I feel like the response in the case of clicker training is a form of evasion, not relational based, kind of like a horse that's trained with cues instead of feel. Yeah. That's a form of evasion. I don't, maybe I didn't think of it that way. I mean, the horse is really going towards, yeah, to a certain point, they're just going towards the dopamine. They just don't even, they're not even thinking about it. And I realize there's much more subtle ways to do it, but yeah, definitely being trained on cues instead of feel, that there's a big difference there for sure. So, the physical component, as this relates to Mowgli, who has been written, I mean, he's broke, and he's so cute. Here, you guys, well, let Michael comment about what we're, and I'm going to see if I can add, can I add photos right now? No.
What am I commenting on?
I don't know.
What if I don't
that
have
sucks.
Comments?
Never mind. I guess I can't do this right now, you guys.
Are we going to post something?
Why? I was going to post the pictures so you guys could see them, but I don't see a way to do that. Oh, I had them all ready and everything. That's lame. Okay, well, I'll have to do it after the show. I'll put them in comments after the show. So here's the thing. This horse is designed to be all cute, right? But he has learned to be long and floppy, which does not serve him because then, I mean, he already doesn't have enough forward, and then he's running into the reins all the time, which is slowing him down. And he, his hocks are about like this versus they will easily be tucked under his body, bent. That's how his body wants to go. But showing him that what I have in mind is how he was built, how he naturally is, and it's going to make everything he does so much easier. He'll even just last longer physically over time, right? Because I'm pretty sure he was accidentally, we'll never know because I don't have enough history on this horse, but you know, taught to be strung out. So showing him that we're heading towards a place that we belong. We belong there. He belongs there. It's not something I'm thinking up. Then he's going to be like, it'll be like coming home. So you'll see, I'm going to post this demo for you guys. This is my first time backing him up under saddle. And the whole, all the chores have not been done yet, but we have a start on the chores. So good groundwork, including a backing circle off the slobber strap. But I need to be riding him too, you know, so same thing. One rein stops and guiding with the rein. But then I need to start putting in some quality stopping and backing so that he can start to put a bend in the hocks, turn loose with the bend in the hocks, end with the bend in the hocks, all of those things, which are not hard for him. But as I'm going along, there's these few moments, fleeting moments here and there where his ears go and just flop forward, and he's just like, but they come and go, very, very ephemeral. You'll see it. And what'll be so cool is I doubt it will take that many more rides, a couple weeks, you know, like 8 rides at the most, maybe even less than that. I don't know. These horses are changing so fast. It's just crazy. So I'll do my best to share that just because it's really an eye opener for me to experience just blowing the dandelion puff away. Anyway, showing him how to be It almost feels like triggering a memory, especially when a horse is habitually operated, because he's 15. So he's habitually operated a certain way, clearly. And what's interesting is Frosty is coming 12. So he's 11. He's coming 12 this year. And he got into some habits that didn't suit him, but there must have been some softness, because there must have been a habit of being soft is what I'm thinking. Because it's coming, it's like the marshmallow. You're like, whoa, how are you doing that? Versus Mowgli, it was like, I don't think you've ever done a one rein stop in your life, dude. You know? And so therefore, he A, didn't know even what it meant. B, he didn't know it was going to be beneficial, right? And how it was going to relate to everything else. Anyway. You talk. I'm sorry. I really was so excited because I had these photos all ready to share. That's stupid. Why can I share them afterwards and not now? Ugh. Lame. Anyway. Any other thoughts on that, Michael? What time is it? It's almost time for us to be done. I talked a lot at the end there.
Talked a lot all the way through. This is going to be one of those where it's like a year from now, I'll be like, saying what you're saying, because right now I'm like, okay, get where you're at, but
I know,
and I do,
I know,
I do understand, but I'm with Buck on this one. You're really in the weeds.
I know. And then what he would probably say is, "Why does it matter? Just do it." You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm compelled to talk about it because it's so cool. It's so cool. I am filled with wonder. How cheesy is that? I don't know how else to say it. And we'll see, because that's the other cool part, right? Is like being like, well, I don't know how this is going to turn out. What's this going to be like? I don't know. But the overriding thing that you guys have helped me come to today is that it's coming to a place, and coming home is a great way to say it, that we are all inevitably being drawn to this place. So I am not creating the place. The place is there. And the only reason the horse isn't there in any given moment is because we have shooshed them out of there accidentally. Myself included. It'll be interesting to talk. I'm rushing to get this. I have so much footage, you guys. Oh my God. I'm stressing out. So I'm going to have to take a break at the beginning of May and just edit. But meanwhile, did you see the little video I did for Lainey on the Horsemanship Insider community wall?
Nope.
You'll have to check it out. Yeah, I posted it yesterday because, you know, she's so curious about what I'm going to do with him. It's real easy for me to be talking to her through the camera.
Lainey had Frosty?
Mm-hmm. From when she was 6 years old to 11 years old, the ripe old age of 11, which she is right now. So she just joined Horsemanship Insider a couple days ago. So, yep, that's it. Anybody else have any comments? Comments or thoughts? No, I'm going to post these pictures and I'll tell you guys real quick about what I'm seeing. Basically, I just want you to look at I have four still shots for you. One of them is, or two of them are of him trotting forward on a long rein. One of them, he's leaning out the front of the rectangle, so he's hitting the rein, right? Even though, like, I'm purposefully piloting him forward on a loose rein, he doesn't know where to be, and it's way longer than he needs on a loose rein. You'll see. And then in another moment, he's operating within that space, which didn't happen the ride before. So those are the two of them. Then the other two, one of them is him trying to get organized in the backup. And then the second one where I'm dropping the reins, that one is good to look at just because you could almost think that his feet are stopped up there. But if you look at his balance, and you'll see it on the video, he's on his way to continuing to slide backward. It's a good still to look at, I think. So I'll just put those four up. Can check them out. Cute little Mowgli. Oh my gosh. He reminds me of Novella. He's not as fancy as Novella, but he is Dark Bay, which is a huge benefit. yeah, but his body style is very similar. Like I said, not as fancy, but pretty close. So it's interesting to be riding one this role. Just the neck, all the ratios. Mm-hmm. But with a very, very different mind. A very different mind, to the point where I don't know how it's going to shape up. For instance, even when Novella was sour, really sour, she was still operating like a lip is on mentally. Mowgli is not dialed in, which is why the clicker would be so tempting, because it would flip a switch and he'd be on it. So I don't for sure know how it's going to shape up when I have him interested. If I can entice him to be interested, however we want to say that.
Well, in theory, you shouldn't have to entice him if it's where he will inevitably be.
Yeah, so excellent point. So how would we say that?
I don't know.
But maybe he's so far off of that path that he's like, I don't see the path. I don't remember the path. Nothing about the path is familiar. And then if I can be like, get him closer, then that's probably exactly it. If I can just get him a little bit closer, then I'll be like a magnet. Gotta get it close enough.
Well, I think you just came out of the weeds a little bit, because I mean,
guys, well, you know I'm bad in the weeds when, like, Michael's like,
well, kind of like your response to Corey's question or comment about Whitney. Is it Whitney?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
good job.
Like, there is a certain level of setting the parameters that might be of calling them back to the path to where it's more possible to find that whatever, where it, I mean, you know, so it's not just, it's inevitable without some level of, depending where the horse is, saying, hey, I'm looking for this. Are you looking for it? Like, we find this together?
And so I would say that the best analogy is a magnet, like center earth or the middle is a magnet. And if we just get them ourselves, and then we're so close, guys. Then it will inevitably get sucked to it. The horse will, and we will. Something like that.
Yes. You did pull yourself out of the weeds pretty quickly there. Because now I'm much more on board with the whole conversation.
So are we saying this whole project is just going to be misery for everyone?
Probably. Depends on how much you're in the weeds.
It's going to be a lot. But I can be superficial on the storytelling.
We need to talk outside of the show because I have some thoughts.
Good. Okay. Yes, I need thoughts.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody, for being here this week. We will see you all next Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
8:30 Central.
Are you going to call me now?
Probably not right away.
Okay. All right.
I'll call you later today.
Okay. Right. Have a good week, you guys. Bye.
Bye.